Luke chapter 15, verses 11 through 32, and I'm going to try to tell this story without looking at my Bible, but we'll see if I can pull this off. Then Jesus said, there was a man who had two sons. The younger son said to his father, give me the share of the property that will be mine. And so the father divided his property among his sons, between his sons. A few days later, the younger son gathered all he had and left, traveled to a far country. There in that far country, he squandered all of his property on riotous living. When he had spent everything, a severe famine came upon that country, and he began to be in need. And so he hired himself out to one of the citizens of that country, who gave him a job feeding pigs. And he longed to fill himself with the bean pods that the pigs were eating. No one gave him anything. When he came to himself, he said, how many of my father's hired hands have enough bread and then some? I will go back to my father and I will say to him, Father, I have sinned against heaven and before you. I'm no longer worthy to be called your son. Treat me as one of your hired hands. So he got up and set out toward his father. And while he was still a ways off, his father saw him and was filled with compassion. And he ran, threw his arms around him and kissed him. And the son said, Father, I've sinned against heaven and before you, and I'm no longer worthy to be called your son. But the father said to his hired hands, quick, bring me a robe, the best one, and put it on him. And put a ring on his finger, and put sandals on his feet, and go get the fatted calf and kill it. Because we need to eat and celebrate. This son of mine was dead and he's alive. He was lost and now he's found. So they began to celebrate. Now the older son had been working in the fields. And as he came and approached the house, he heard music and dancing. And he called one of the hired hands and asked what was going on. And he told him, your brother has come. And your father has killed the fatted calf because he's got him back safe and sound. And the older brother became angry and refused to go in. So his father came out to him and began to plead with him. But the son replied, listen, all these years I have worked for you like a hired hand. Not once did I disobey you, and you never gave me even a goat that I might celebrate with my friends. And when this son of yours comes back after wasting your property with prostitutes, you kill the fatted calf for him? His father said to him, son, you are always with me. All that I have is yours. But this we must celebrate and rejoice, because this brother of yours, he was dead and now he's alive. He was lost and is found. Story of the prodigal son, Luke 15. Well, I don't want to insult you by explaining a story that you already understand, that needs little explanation. All I want to do this morning is just kind of dust off a few parts of the story that maybe you've missed, or perhaps distract you from some things that have been made up about this story that almost create imaginary additions to this story. It's like I heard someone say once about the background, the velvet that you lay out when you're examining diamonds. Have you ever been looking at diamonds, loose diamonds? It's not really something I do very often. But, you know, they spread out this black velvet to put the diamonds on, to make the diamonds look beautiful. But sometimes preachers get so excited about the black velvet they spread out, they talk about all the black velvet, they forget to talk about the diamonds. So I just want to put your attention on the diamonds this morning. This whole chapter, Luke 15, is about lost things. We have a shepherd who has 100 sheep and he loses one. And he leaves the 99 in the wilderness to go find the one that's lost. Or we have a woman who has 10 coins. And we don't know if she's a widow or if she's a young woman who's going to be. She's got 10 coins and she loses one. And she tears the whole house apart until she finds the one. And here we have a father who has 2 sons. And one of them is lost. And he waits day and night until he's found again. And so this parable, which is called the prodigal son, is really a parable about the father who had 2 sons. It's told in 2 parts. The beginning part of this story is about the younger son. But the second half of the parable, starting in verse 25, is about the older son. So this is really a story of 2 sons. In the parable of the prodigal son, the younger son asked his father for his share of the inheritance. And you probably are aware that by asking his father for his inheritance now, he is in essence wishing his father were dead. I mean, imagine thinking to yourself, when my parents die, I will be rich. And not just thinking it, but wishing it could speed up. That's the perspective of this younger son. I want my money now. He isn't just off to sow his wild oats like we think young people should do. I don't know who thinks that, but some seem to. But he has turned his back on his family with disgrace for his father. But yet, the father split his property between his 2 sons. Now, you may be aware that in Jewish custom, the older son gets the bigger share, 2 shares. And since there's just 2 sons, the younger son will get 1/3 and the older son 2/3. So 1/3, I guess, is, we don't know how rich the father was, but he was obviously well off enough to have hired hands. And so 1/3 of the father's property was enough to make the son feel like he had quite a nest egg. And what the father has done here by cashing out the younger son is, in essence, buying out the younger son's share of the inheritance. It would be as if your parents died and left you the house, and your siblings allowed you to buy their share of the house so that then you could use it as a rental property or sell it yourself. That's what's happened here. The younger son's share has been bought out now by the father. So everything else belongs now to who? To the older son. Well, the younger son squandered his money in the far country on riotous living. Notice that Jesus doesn't tell us what that riotous living was. The older son later will assume it was on prostitutes, but that's not what we have in the story here. It just simply says he squandered it on dissolute, riotous living. You see, the younger son's judgment wasn't just poor at home, it was poor away from home as well. That his poor judgment about wanting his inheritance today carried over into his poor judgment on how to use money once he had it in the far country. And can you imagine if you were a friend of the family back home watching his demise on social media? Might you perhaps have rejoiced at his bad fortune? He has made a fool of himself. Thank goodness after the way he's treated his family. But in verse 17, Jesus says he came to himself. He finally came to himself when he had lost everything and had nowhere else to turn. This phrase, came to himself, it occurs four times in Luke's gospel. In the story of the rich man who built bigger barns. In the story of the dishonest steward in chapter 16. And in chapter 18, the story of the wicked judge. These four uses of the words are always about people who are less than righteous, who come to self-serving conclusions. Remember the man who built bigger barns? The text says he came to himself and said, I don't have enough room in my barns for all my grain. I must build bigger barns. Is that a good conclusion? No. And so this idea here in verse 17 where he comes to himself is not some conversion moment. The younger son has not suddenly had an awakening where he realizes how much he needs the Lord. No, he's just simply had a self-serving realization that the only way to get food is to go home. The younger son, let me make it clear if you didn't know this before now, the younger son is no hero. The younger son should be no one's role model. The younger son is a fool. You do not want to be him. But when he came home, the father welcomed his son with a celebration worthy of a conquering hero. Now we know the context of these three stories about lost things here in Luke 15 is the beginning verses where Jesus was associating with sinners and tax collectors. And the Pharisees and the Jewish teachers were complaining and grumbling about Jesus hanging out with sinners. And so the idea of restoration and repentance should have been common in Jewish thought. They're common in Christianity as well. We welcome, we're glad when people repent and return to God. But think about this. Do we throw a party for the loser who blasted us to smithereens and then comes slinkering back. We welcome home the penitent sinner, but should we throw a party for someone who has been so foolish? See, the father loves both sons, and he goes out to both sons. And both times the father does so in a very strange way, undignified way for men of his generation, running out, throwing his arms around his son. The father loves both sons. The prodigal was undeserving, but here's what's fascinating. It's the older brother who had to pay the cost of the celebration to welcome him home. Because everything that's left belongs to who? The older brother. So when the father makes the choice to kill the fatted calf and throw a party for the younger son, it's now coming out of the older son's bank account. The younger son did not deserve any of this. I mean, imagine if this family were your next door neighbors and you'd watched as they had suffered over what their son had done to them. You'd watched for months and years as they grieved what their son was doing to them day in and day out. And then he comes home. And they act like nothing happened. They throw him a giant party and they invite the neighborhood. Would you go? Would you go to the party? Would you celebrate over this loser who's come home? See, the older brother, he was the rightful owner of everything. But the sad thing is, the older brother never knew he had the rights of being a son. In his reply to his father, he says, I worked for you like what? Like a slave. He views himself as a slave and not as a son. I knew a man once who viewed his role as a husband and father as a machine for money. He felt his life was just about making money for the family. And so he grew to despise his family. He had an affair. The father's generosity is great. Why? Because he loves all his children. Who has been there for you? Have there been times in your life when you were a lost cause? Who has loved you without conditions? Who has always welcomed you back, even in the moments when you were at your worst? You know, there are people in my life who have just always been there for me. And what's fascinating is whatever life situation you're in, whether you're in school or whether you're working or whether you're retired, it feels like there are friends and co-workers who will write you off with just one mistake. One mistake, and they'll treat you like dirt from that point on forevermore. But then there are friends who don't care what you've done and where you've been, they just are your friends. I love going to Pepperdine every year, but Pepperdine sometimes for me is actually kind of hard because you watch these people and you see how they've been quote-unquote successful and how they're hanging out with other successful friends, and yet here you are. In ministry, it's kind of tough sometimes. Then I run into an old friend like David, who I hadn't seen in 25 years. He just came from Tennessee to Pepperdine, and he loves me. I love David. great to be with them. Or I see my friends Jason and Amanda who come down from Oregon every now and then to Pepperdine. When I see them, it doesn't matter where I've been or what I've done. They're just happy to see me. You know, that's great, isn't it, to have those kind of friends who are there for you no matter what. As my dad grew older, he began to care less about things and began to say things that stuck with me. Things like, you know, things don't matter. What matters are relationships and people. You'd have a car wreck. You know, when you're still just learning to drive, your dad's first response is, oh, how dare you have a wreck, you know. But as you get older, the dad's first response is, are you okay? Cars can be replaced. You can't be replaced, right? I know sometimes in church we say it's not about you, it's about the church. But you need to know something important. It is about you. You do matter. You're never a lost cause. But the challenge for us is not just that we aren't lost causes, it's that there are no lost causes out there either. There's no one whom the Father doesn't love. It's easy to think in terms of either or, either the older son or the younger son, either the rich or the poor, either educated or uneducated, either documented or undocumented, either Republican or Democrat. But for God, it's and. God loves all his children. A couple months ago at the Fresno State basketball game, like they normally do for the men's games, they have a hero of the game. And at Dennis Crum's urging, they had Ron Rocha as their hero of the game. I don't want to talk a lot about this because I'm hoping Ron will one day share this with us as a church. But they called Ron Rocha up to be the hero of the game. And they recounted his service in the Vietnam War. And Ron told me, I think several folks were there at the game. I know Chloe Ann, you and Dennis were there. But Ron told me, he said, that was a healing experience for him. Because when he came back from the Vietnam War 35 years ago, there were many people who were so upset about the war that they not only took out their frustration on politicians, but on the young men who were returning from the war. And he had people treat him poorly. Which one of us, if we'd known that night they were going to celebrate Ron, which one of us would not have wanted to be there to celebrate our Ron Rocha? Right? What if there was a celebration for a deserter, a traitor, someone who walked away from their unit, someone who gave our secrets to the Russians? Would you go to that celebration? Would you be happy they had that person as the hero of the game? You know, Bob Cross celebrating a 90th birthday, and I know the family is throwing a party for Bob. Bob is one of the most kind, loyal, generous men I've ever known. Who wouldn't want to go to a party for Bob Cross, right? But what about for somebody who stabbed us in the back? Who left our church spitting on us as they left, trying to steal members as they went? And there's a party for that person. Would you want to be there? See, the reality is of the prodigal son story is that it's a difficult story. I love it when God welcomes me back, but it's hard for me to welcome some others. The Father's generosity is great. Why? Because he loves all his children. And the question for us this morning is not, will God throw a party for us? Because he will. He has. He does. The question for us is, will you come and join the party for those whom we'd rather resent? Will we rejoice like God rejoices over all his children? This morning, there will be some up during the singing of this song available to pray, to counsel. This morning, won't you hear the word of the Lord for all his children?